B-Pod Studios.
Now. Sports Talk. Well, you're on the clock. This is Zulak and Bertrand.
A sports show radio host.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Think about this as one last time. But I was reading a verse in Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verse 9 and 10. It says, two is better for one, but they have a great reward. Because if one falls, the other one can pick them up. The other one can pick them up. What was the man who's alone? Because no one can pick him up. All day today, fellas, have each other's back. One last time. One last time for the 2018 season. We've been through everything to be here in this moment. In this moment, for everyone back home, for your mom, your dad, your grandparents, everyone that loves you. Tonight is the night. Show the world. Dominate on three. One, two, three.
Josie's on a vacation far away.
Suck it, McCarthy.
So upset about that, huh?
That was bad. You know, that was a bad day for you.
A little bit older.
Denounced
it. I
didn't see him playing any Springsteen after the game.
I don't want to lose your love tonight.
Nice. What's up, Perry? Joe Perry, NBC Sports Boston, is with us.
What's going on?
They played this song probably four times after the game ended.
Played it in the first quarter.
I think they did play it during the game, right?
They did.
Like first quarter. I'm like, no!
They played it after the win, and then every half hour or so, I think there was like a loop playlist, and like every half hour, this song would play again. Because we were there 3.5 hours.
Now, why was that song on the playlist?
Because it's a Patriots
you submit
type of song.
The team submits it.
Five
submits a list.
Last year, we heard Elton John, Philadelphia Freedom, like every half hour after the game ended.
Fly, Eagles,
that was
fly.
One of the things we heard for hours on end after the game ended last year in Minnesota. This year it was a little different. It's always better when you win. Phil, how are you, bud?
Doing great. Just kind of recovering this week from a busy week last week, but doing good.
From the season.
Yeah, long season.
What's your lasting thought about this game that you're going to remember most about this?
Listen, I've got a lot of thoughts about this game. My first one off the top is, and this is something I wrote about during Super Bowl week. Talked to a lot of people who were members of that 2001 team, people who covered the team in 2001 and still cover the team now, opponents of the 2001 team but cover the league now. Is this the best coaching job that Bill Belichick's ever done? And I think you can rank it way up there. I don't know if it's number one. There were people that I spoke to for this piece, Troy Brown included, who said it might be.
Yeah,
it might be number one.
We've heard for how many years? Oh, where's the defensive master? You know, I thought he could devise any plan against any quarterback to shut him down.
I think it's an interesting conversation because 2001 will always be, I think, number one to me and to a lot of people just because of where that team was. And Belichick was really only in year two of, you know, a 4 or 5 year plan.
It wasn't built yet.
That wasn't built to win a Super Bowl, and they did. But this year, getting back to the Super Bowl, for the first time, losing Super Bowl team made it back in 25 years.
But think about post-Butler decision, too.
Post-Butler decision.
Sort of he reinvigorated this topic, you know, by going out there and just stamping up this type of game plan, just completely shutting them down.
Yeah, I think this game really is sort of the cherry on top because this was Bill. This was Bill. It was Brian Flores, but this was Bill's defense that really shined that night. And so I think it's an interesting topic of conversation because 66 years old, however many years into his coaching career, and maybe this was the best year he's had. I think you could make that argument.
All right, so that's part of the equation. What's the what are all these other thoughts you have? Seems like you had a lot to tell us today.
No.
he's got the cheat sheet?
No. Nope. Do you guys want Josh Gordon back next year?
I don't.
I would be willing to give him another chance.
I would too. I mean, he really helped save your offense for 10 weeks there.
Here's what I don't want. I don't want them to bring him back and then have some expectation of being able to count on him.
They need a breakaway guy.
I said this earlier.
They need a breakaway guy.
Philip Dorsett played 26 snaps in the Super Bowl. 26. He was invisible out there for those 26 snaps. He was ghosting everybody. No one even knew he was there. You'd be better served if those 26 snaps were Josh Gordon. And I think they suffered a little bit from not having a real threat down the field in this game. They tried to establish that with Chris Hogan. They could not do it. It wasn't there. Chris Hogan is not that guy. So would they have been helped? Yes. But it's a complicated equation because I thought the team was better and their offense was better and was more in sync and in rhythm. And Brady was forced to be better when Josh Gordon was not on the field, and I think that helped them. I think that helped them in the game against San Diego. I think it helped them in their game against Kansas City. I think the fact that he wasn't there in a weird way sort of helped them.
But I also know that he would have helped them on Sunday.
So would I give him another chance? Yeah, I'd bring it back and give him another chance.
Yeah, it's an interesting debate because on the one hand, they found their identity once he was gone. Right? They became a different team once he was gone. They were forced to become a different team, but they became a different team and they became more efficient. And they became, in some ways, more versatile because, yes, everything seemed to be based on the run.
Yep.
But how often did we see the play action work and just these huge gaps in the defense because they were able to run the football and they just said to themselves, this is what we're going to be. Period. End of story. However, you could have used an explosive threat. How many times did we talk about it? The better part of the last 2 months with no Josh Gordon was if you fall behind, it's really difficult with the pieces you have in place to make up ground quickly, to make up yardage quickly, and to put points on the board quickly. They really didn't have that. It wasn't Rob Gronkowski. Julian Edelman it was tremendous, obviously, late in the season. He was really good all season, but he's not that explosive play down the field threat. And I don't think it's a piece that you necessarily base your offense on if you have that guy, but it's nice to have when you do get into those situations where it has to come back.
It's nice to have to make the rest of your offense function more efficiently or to be able to have more plays that are there for the guys you really want to be throwing the ball to, which in this game, Gronkowski and Edelman were those two guys. He would have had an easier time passing to both of those players, and obviously he found ways to get the ball to Edelman. And late, he found those ways to get the ball to Gronk. He would have had an easier day.
It's amazing to me how
Gordon
the Rams
was on the field.
It's amazing to me how the Rams didn't adapt to what Edelman and what Gronkowski were doing to them. Because there was a point in that game, and I think it was around halftime, and Jim had the stat too. He did a good job with them. Targets thrown to those two guys and the completion percentage. They were operating at like 90% going to those guys and totally ineffective going to anybody else. And the Rams had no answer for it. They had no answer for Edelman.
You know, the one time that I saw them come up with an answer for Edelman was on the game-winning drive where they ran that same play three times in a row, that Haas slot juke play. Edelman in the slot on the second snap of those three consecutive plays that they ran.
Yeah.
They just jammed the crap out of Julian Edelman. They sent a linebacker basically, full speed ahead, just run at him. He was doubled off the snap.
They knocked him down.
And so I said to myself, just watching it back, you know, I understand why you don't want to do that every play because you're making yourself a little bit vulnerable elsewhere. But he was their only option for three quarters of that game, if not more. So why not try to do that a little bit more to that guy? That was curious to me. A lot of coaching mistakes, coaching gaffes, asleep at the wheel type of stuff, I thought, from the Rams in this game.
617-779-0985. Why don't we get to some of the calls on the Patriots that have been hanging on. Jeff is in Phoenix. Hey, Jeff. Jeff, you there? No? Dead? No. Okay. Nick in the car. Nick.
Hey, guys. Three quick things. First, the two kids from that fight have been identified as being from nowhere other than Charlestown. Last night, the Celtics game, I felt like the second half, they actually kind of gave that game away because it was, at some points, it was terrible shot selection. I mean, I felt like they were just throwing threes up from all sorts. It just didn't look good. And last, I'll leave you guys with the question, what's the over-under on Rob Gronkowski coming back next year? Great show as always, guys.
Okay, Nick.
I'll let Phil answer that one. I already gave my opinion on that.
I still feel like it's a long shot to get him back here.
Really?
Now, maybe what happened at the end of the season.
I'd say it's 60-40 he's done right now. And that's a better percentage than what I would. Last week, I would have given you 5-10% chance he was coming back. I think the odds are better now, but I'm not convinced he's coming back yet. I still think the odds are he hangs him up.
I would put it right around there. 60-40, 70-30. And that's only because we've been talking about it all season
and we followed him all season. The more I hear from him, though, the more I feel he's in a good place.
Yeah, I understand.
Which is what could lead to him coming back.
Yeah, what did he say the other night on one of those late night shows? He was dodging cans, preparing for next year.
And also talking about feeling good and being
able to bounce back. And the Brady video where he's sort of weighing it, kind of shrugging his shoulders. I get it. I would understand, I guess, if he's feeling great as the season comes to a close here, he could look at it and say, yeah, you know what? Here's the thing, though. I mean, the contract has to get figured out because $9 million base salary, are you coming back on that if you're Rob Gronkowski? Does the team want you to come back on that? I don't think so. Given what you think you're getting in terms of production from him, I don't know if you can invest that kind of money in that guy. I would be surprised if they would do that.
Like, Mark Bavaro got really banged up, and I thought he was a great tight end back when I played. I thought he was the best in the league because he could do everything. He could block, he could catch, he was physical, he'd kill people, and he played hurt. And he was on Radio Row talking about how he extended his career, working with the team. Giants worked with him, gave him days off, see on Wednesday, that type of stuff. You know, maybe these two guys are at a point now. You know, hey, Brady skipped OTAs. They won a Super Bowl. Like, you can't beat that drum anymore.
That's what's interesting. You might just start doing things differently if you're Bill Belichick in this franchise because of what you have on your roster, because of the guys that are most important to your team.
Got some new coaches coming in.
And you look at it and you say, well, I guess we're just going to try to make as many runs at this thing as possible. And if the best thing for us is to have Rob Gronkowski, and if he, you know, if he only wants to practice one day a week, who are we to say we shouldn't do that?
It was interesting all week seeing them, and even before media night, like ownership, Bill, everybody that's around Bill, whether it's Linda, whether it's Bears, whether it's, you know, Tom, Alex, everybody around Tom, everybody's on the same page, and they felt good about it. They're all happy. So why not keep this thing rolling?
You have to figure out the money, and you have to figure out how important practices are to you. Because if you're just going to allow guys to stop, you know, working during the week as much as you would like them to, does that have an impact? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it does. Maybe they would be okay with it. Roman Pfeiffer was another guy. You mentioned Bavaro.
Right.
Roman Pfeiffer had an unbelievable plan worked out with Bill Belichick. Had family on the West Coast. They would say, see you later on Sundays, and he would come back, I think, on Wednesdays.
Wednesdays, right.
So, you know, maybe you can get some sort of plan figured out with Rob Gronkowski to make it work so that, all sides are happy. I just feel like right now with the way the contract is, and given what we saw from him during the season, I mean, this was a guy who was not happy for long stretches of the season. I would still be surprised if he came back.
Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston is with us. More with him coming up in this noontime hour after we check on the action update.
Now, a look at the numbers with the action update on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Brent Musburger's action update for 98.5 The Sports Hub. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on candidates in an online dashboard at Indeed.com/hire. Now, here are the latest lines from my guys in the desert.
Now that we have survived the NBA trade deadline, odds makers here in Las Vegas have staked out a clear position on the Eastern Conference that only four teams have a chance to win it. At the Westgate, the Celtics, Bucks, 76ers, and Raptors are each 9-4 favorites to get to the NBA Finals and 10-1 each to win the championship. No other team is shorter than 100-1 to win the East. The Warriors are still 2-5 odds-on favorites to win their third straight title. For the latest odds all the time, visit VSiN.com. I'm Ron Flatter. This has been your Action Update.
Zolak and Bertrand continues on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Play fake. Goff on the drop. Has time. Shuffles left. Throws to the end zone. Wide open receiver. Cooks. And the ball is knocked incomplete.
Holy crap. Cooks does a great job throwing his hand up. He sees no coverage back here, no safety. Throws the hand up. Goff sees it late.
He was underneath the goalpost, and when Goff let it go, there wasn't a Patriot within 10 yards. Jason McCourty closed quickly. That should have been six.
Money, money, Boston. Never used to knock on wood, but I know someone who had. Hey.
It's a good Cape Summer music. The hell is this?
Boston's. I don't know the song.
Phil Perry is with us.
Yeah, he didn't make that clear.
Phil, you heard that play from Super Bowl 53, the breakup in the end zone. Tremendous play.
Great play.
Jason McCourty covered a ton of ground to make it. A bad throw by Goff allowed it all to happen. So what do you know about this play? Well, because after the game, Jason McCourty wanted nothing to do with taking credit on this thing.
Well, this is after Chung went out, right?
This was after Chung went out, but it didn't really have much to do with Chung's absence. So I go to Jason McCourty after this, and I know I'm writing about it, whether it was that night or the next morning. Going to be writing about that play. Huge play in the game. Doesn't take a ton of credit for it. You know, he's obviously happy. The guy's, unbelievable turnaround in terms of his career last year, this year. So I go to his brother as they're both walking back to the locker room after they go to the little podium there. I go, why won't your brother take any credit for that play? Unbelievable play. What's going on there? Because he blew it the first time.
Oh,
he blew it. He was just doing what he was supposed to do. They missed it. They missed it the first time.
What do you mean he missed it the first time?
And he's off. So I go back and I watch. Rams ran, and this was on Turning Point. If you guys watch, if anybody out there watched Turning Point, another one of these great mic'd up type shows. They ran, the Rams ran the exact same play late in the first quarter. Same play, same formation, same route combinations. Basically a two-man route where you have a Cooks running the post.
Yep.
And you have the deep over coming from the other side.
That's their standard shot play.
Pretty, exactly. Pretty standard stuff from the Rams. Patriots are in quarters coverage. Cover four means you're splitting up the field into four deep zones, essentially. What they did the first time around was Gilmore stayed with the post. So he stayed with Cooks basically across the field, overlapping with the two safeties in the middle. And the two safeties in the middle jumped the crosser. Jason McCourty's kind of out in no man's land by himself, not covering anybody because it's only a two-man route.
Right,
and there's nobody on that side of the field. So they come back to the sideline and they say, Jason, you gotta climb to that post because there's nobody there. You got to help Steph because if they saw it the first time, it would have been a touchdown the first time.
Jesus.
Pressure got to Goff. He didn't see it. He might have been able to get rid of the ball, but pressure got to him eventually and he ends up throwing an incompletion. So they say, we're going to see this again. You got to get to that post if this happens again.
What'd you make of Goff?
Not great.
Yeah.
But what happened on the second time? So the second time they see it again, the play we all know now, and McCourty obviously gets there for the post, but Gilmore cuts him loose for no reason. There's three guys on the crosser. There's nobody on the post. So Gilmore, I would think, unless one of those safeties, they made another adjustment and one of those safeties was supposed to take him, looked like Gilmore messed that one up. And Jason McCourty was really the only line of defense on that play. And thankfully for the Patriots, he got there. But just in the nick of time, and only because they talked about it a couple quarters before.
And maybe because it was a bad throw and he knew it was a bad throw.
It was a terrible throw.
Allowed him to make the play. So he wasn't about to start bragging.
I think that's part of it too. That was part of it too. Talking to him the next day. We were down at Gillette Stadium the next day and talking to him. Yeah, if he had seen that a little bit earlier, that would be a touchdown.
Yeah, or if he had just made a better throw. Good throw.
Just chuck and duck.
That was an unbelievably bad. I couldn't believe how weird it came off his hand.
Yeah.
Well, it was almost end over end by the time it got to Cooks.
You know what happens? The guy gets so open and you freak out as a thrower and you don't set your feet.
So we watched.
He never set his feet. Interesting.
We watched back again. We were talking about this in our opening segment today. Did he slip? He slipped with his front foot.
So he stepped to throw and it went out?
It's
because he's unsure. You do that, though.
He slipped with his front foot, not his back foot.
It's hard to explain.
It wasn't like he stepped back and he lost his footing on his back foot. His front foot somehow slips.
I wonder, what do you do if you're the Rams with that
you
guy?
Start you start to on. Think about who your next quarterback is going to be.
Because somebody at some point across the league, one of these teams, has to put their foot down and say, we're not paying a mediocre quarterback top-of-the-line money. Because you're just killing yourself if you do it. Whether it's Goff, Kirk Cousins, you know, like, you look at these guys. Can you allow one of these players to carry you to a Super Bowl if you pay him that kind of money?
Interesting. I don't know. Their window is brief with the money that they've invested.
Totally.
And the contracts they've given. They're gonna have to move some pieces in the coming years.
So the report is the Eagles are gonna tag Foles.
Tag and trade.
And they're like, well, why don't you just sign and trade him? Well, maybe they're getting rid of the other guy. I don't think that's the case. They're gonna stick with Wentz. I mean, there's better upside there with Wentz. I understand that. But it's funny because Foles didn't pick up his option. Said, I'm not picking up the option. And then they said, we're going to tag you. So I know you want something in return. And
I think that's what that is.
The 50-year option on Goff would be over $22 million. Are you going to do that for him?
No.
Right, so I'd say, you know what? 18. If I'm them, 2019, this is going to be your last year here.
I think you got to start looking. I think McVay probably knows he's got to start looking. You need, as good as McVay is, as smart as he is, as often as he's able to help the quarterback pre-snap, here's what you're looking at, here's what we want to hit. At some point, you have to have a quarterback who can do some things on his own.
Right.
And I just didn't see that from him in the Super Bowl. Now, maybe he showed it throughout the course of the season. I certainly didn't watch every regular season game the Rams played. But it seems like there's a lot of hand-holding there.
Something happened midpoint on. I think he had 26 touchdowns, 4 picks, first 8 games. Second half of the season, he had more interceptions than he did touchdowns. So he tanked midseason.
Well, and once Kupp went out, I think even once Kupp went out, which I think was week 5.
Cooper Kupp is the reason he's going to tank?
His numbers, as soon as that injury occurred, went down. And they went down pretty steeply. So again, I'm not saying he's a terrible quarterback. I mean, that throw to Cooks at the goal line that he dropped.
That was a good throw.
He should have caught that ball, even though Daron Harmon came over and hit him. That went through his arms before Harmon even touched him.
When's Cooks ever caught a ball like that, though? Where there's contact coming and he's not on the sideline where he could cradle it. It's
not a contested catch guy.
Yep.
Not a contested catch guy. Totally. We know that from watching him here.
He should have caught both, to be totally honest. Cook should have caught both.
The play McCourty broke up too? I mean, yeah.
He got both hands on it. Got both hands on it. He should have made that play.
That was a tough. That would have been a tough catch because of the timing. But he should have caught the goal line one.
And he had 120 yards. That is the epitome of Brandon Cooks, that Super Bowl right there.
Alex in Scituate. Alex.
Hey, guys. Sorry. Yeah, two quick points. One is Brady. I love Brady as much as the next guy. But, you know, 9 Super Bowls. 0 first down touchdowns. Is that nerves or is that game planning? And the other point I wanted to make was, you know, I heard Perry bring up the point about Edelman and there were no adjustments made towards Edelman. And I heard a lot of the criticism coming down on McVay this past week, who's a sophomore coach at 33, but no criticism towards Wade Phillips. Doesn't he deserve some of the brunt?
Sure.
Not only just for not making adjustments towards Edelman, but also not, you know, talking to McVay at halftime about offensive adjustments that can be made. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, he held the Patriots to 16 points. It's hard to kill the guy for that.
Right.
They should win that game. You score 16 points against the Rams. The Rams should be able to put up 20 on just about
13,
anybody.
Right?
Sorry, 13. Yes, 16. Thank you.
When the hell
16
get
total full? Points. I got that in my brain.
Should have had 16. They missed a field goal.
Should have had 16.
Oh, thanks, Jim.
Give up 13 points. The point stands there. I think, you know, hard to kill Wade Phillips. But McVay, you look at it and you say, what was your adjustment when the Patriots, I mean, you look at some of these plays, first down, they've got 6 guys on the line of scrimmage.
They had no new wrinkles in the second half. It was the same thing. How many times did they take that tight end where they went 2 tights, offset him inside the strength of the tight end, brought motion left to right, and handed the ball to a Gurley backside or Anderson? Every single time, same formation, never ran a play action. Here comes a run. Here comes a run. Here comes the run.
Well, because they wanted to get something established, it felt like, right? Because everything is based off that run. And then off of that, you get your play action, you get your down-the-field shots. What they don't do, which I find fascinating for as productive as they were during the season, where is their quick-hitting passing game?
Yeah.
Like, where is the screen game?
They didn't use it. They threw one to Cooks. That was it.
Nothing to the receivers. Quick, you know, one-step drop and throw. Like, almost nothing. And so do something to put a little bit of doubt in that Patriots front in their minds because they had 6 guys at the line of scrimmage and they're all getting vertical. That's another thing on the mic'd up stuff. Bill Belichick saying, get vertical against the run game, get vertical against the pass game. What do you do to try to counteract that if you're an offense?
Screen.
Use their aggressiveness against
screen,
them.
Screen and draw.
Screens. Quick hitting passing plays, and they just couldn't do it. It was like if there was nothing down the field, they weren't even going to throw it.
You had to have some success throwing a football if you're going to run draws, and they didn't have that. So you could lay your ears back and go get that kid. You knew it right away, too. You could just tell that he didn't have it. So they were going to feast on him. Why not run blitzes? I'd blitz all day. That kid cannot handle the blitz.
I think we talk about balance a lot when you talk about the Rams. It's just, you know, they ran the ball more on a percentage basis than any other team in the league this year. They do have those down-the-field throws. But balance isn't just run-pass. It's run, it's throw short, it's throw long, it's throw inside, it's throw outside, and it seemed like their passing game is pretty streamlined to do only a couple things.
Miss something?
You gotta wear your lucky jersey, don't wash the lucky socks,
rub your ball 16 times. Yeah.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now, back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
Hey, Coach. Trying to look for you. Like, you know, man, so much respect for you.
Likewise. It's been interesting to be able to study for these couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It's really good. You got a lot of good stuff.
Appreciate you saying that. Feelings are mutual. I mean, just the way that you guys are able to shift your identity and really still be able to figure it out, I mean, week in and week out, it's unbelievable, man. It's really a credit to you guys. So much respect.
You guys are playing good now. Playing good. We'll catch up in the offseason.
Yeah, no, I look forward to that. Yeah. It'd be great. It's pretty wild, though, but looking forward to catching up. But really, so much respect for you and the way you do it, man. You're what's right about coaching.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, Coach.
And you ask yourself, how old am I, young coach boy?
That's the full version. That's the full version of that conversation. Let me tell you, Showtime.
Kiss his ass, kiss your ass. Kiss his ass again.
Showtime did Sean McVay wrong.
Jesus, McVay.
Listen to what aired on Showtime. So was it Tuesday night? Tuesday night when the first show came out, the first version of this came out, we crushed him on Wednesday when Ted Johnson was in. Listen.
Trying to look for you. Like, yes, you know, man.
So much respect for you.
Likewise.
You're the best.
You've done a great job.
Yeah, so, you know, you're the best, man. The way that you guys are able to shift your identity and really still be able to figure it out, I mean, week in and week out, it's unbelievable, man. Really, so much respect for you and the way you do it, man. You're what's right about coaching.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, coach.
When you hear it that way, does it not sound like it's a one-way conversation and Sean McVay is completely kissing the ass of Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
When you give it some context, it takes on a different feel to it.
That's guarded.
It's not as bad.
That's guarded Bill, too, though. Bill knows everybody's mic'd up.
There's one more little nugget that I heard from one of the
the
mic'd up stuff.
What?
No, there's one response from Bill after McVay calls him the best. He goes, you know, you're the best. You're the best ever, man. You're the best ever.
You're on your way.
And he says,
you're the next
he says, bleep, you're taking over, man. Yeah. Bill to McVay.
Yeah. I haven't heard that.
I heard that one. I saw that
you're
one.
Over,
that turning
man.
Point?
It might have been. I can't keep them all straight. I can't keep them straight.
They take the same conversation.
I thought they cut it
three different ways.
I thought it was like, you're the next guy.
You're taking over. That's what he said. You're taking over, man.
And I say Showtime as in the Showtime show because like NFL Films works on all this stuff.
Yeah, right.
It goes through them.
Right.
But
so they just cut it up
different ways. It's not as bad. It's not as bad when you hear the full context. It's still a little much.
He's just like, so hyper-energetic.
It's game day. Can you save this crap for the offseason? Can you just tell him, hey, coach, looking forward to a good game. Why don't we catch up in the offseason? Looking forward to that. That's going to be great.
He knows he's mic'd up, too. He knows he's mic'd up, too.
Oh, Bill.
He's a bundle of energy.
You think Bill needs that?
Yeah,
oh, you're taking over, man.
He's got a little Pete Carroll
taking over? Bill took him to school. What do you mean taking over? That's not taking over.
I think Bill really does respect him, though.
Oh, sure
I don't think he's. I don't think he's just shoveling
no, I think
stuff
he does.
His way.
I think he does
when it comes.
No,
to that.
I think that's genuine, but I also think that it's overstated. And I think that we're now learning. Yeah, you can get a crap quarterback like Jared Goff to the Super Bowl. You can do it with Sean McVay, and that's why so many teams are attracted to anybody who's anything like him.
I bet Bill doesn't like everybody else getting their gigs because of McVay. I think Bill respects McVay alone, but these other guys that it's quarterback coach or Kingsbury, you know,
Taylor.
You're not even good enough to be head coach at USC.
How do you think, you know,
Taylor and Kingsbury?
Belichick is a guy who does believe in the paying your dues process, right? He does.
Look at Flores.
That's
look
how he came
look
up,
he
paying
did.
His dues,
yeah.
You know, driving around for Ted Marchabrota or some crap, right? Like, yeah, okay, fabulous.
Mangini, give me the ribs.
Right, whatever it is. You know,
Charlie Weiss had to go fetch Parcells Gatorade.
All those guys in the Cleveland crew there living in apartments, you know, six of them at a time, all that garbage. He likes that. He likes guys who pay their dues. It's old school. I have no issue with that. And so he must look at a guy like Zach Taylor, whose like qualifications for the job were he was the offensive coordinator at the University of Cincinnati a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Now he's the head coach of the Bengals. Oh, yeah. I'm sure he has tons of respect for that
He'll
guy.
Hold that
well, here's the thing.
Get out of here.
But that's not on Zach Taylor. Who's that on? That's on ownership. That's on ownership.
Right.
If Bill's going to look at anybody and say, what are we doing here? It's at those guys. Because what McVay has done is truly impressive. He's taken a system in the Shanahan system, and he has made it his own. There's nobody out there that's running the same sort of stuff that he's running with the jet sweeps and the missile motions and the tight splits. And this is Rams stuff that, you know, you have to give McVay credit for. And so he has done things his own way, and I think that's why Bill respects him, is because he's a little bit of an outside-the-box thinker. Bill Belichick is an outside-the-box thinker.
That's
totally creative, and I think he sees some of that in McVay on the offensive side.
That's why he likes Shanahan's kid, too, sort of the same ilk. Think about that, too, with Bill, as far as legacies, and did this sort of rejuvenate him as a defensive coach and you know one of the all-time best devised game plans that you've seen in a Super Bowl. If you didn't mismanage the end of that Miami game, that Steven Jackson game, say you went down there and you laid the wood. That team was ready to die, to quit, that Miami team. You're playing home in the playoffs, and you probably go to five straight Super Bowls instead of four out of five. That would be five. You would have beat Denver at home. With Manning, the way he was throwing, he couldn't throw. He would have had to come here. You would have beat him here. So you would have went to five straight Super Bowls. That's how close they were. But no, they went down there and had to see if Steven Jackson could run.
And that's what's fascinating about that conversation. Was 2018 Bill Belichick's best job ever? It's like, well, 2015, they were really close, and they were incredibly banged up. 2013, they were close. They had no weapons. 2011, they never should have got to the Super Bowl. They got to the Super Bowl. 2006, 06, they were going to the Super Bowl. They had that game won.
Oh.
With the personnel that they had, that's an incredible job. So it's like you can pick almost every single year.
Am I so reluctant to give him credit for 06, given that he's also the GM?
That was right.
Well, that's the thing.
That was Brady. That was Brady's best year.
One of his best.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable.
It'll be completely forgotten in history that year in 06. Jay's in Connecticut. What's up, Jay?
Actually, Massachusetts.
But oh, okay.
That's my question.
Well, how'd you get Connecticut on there?
Probably because the town is Groton. Here's my question. In regards to Brian Flores, I happened to be Googling and searching, and I ran across a comment that said that when he graduated from BC, he sent out 32 or whatever it is letters to all the teams in the NFL saying he would take any type of a position he wanted to get into professional football. The post was an older post, and the response came back. The only one that sent him a return email and expressed interest was Belichick. Do you know if that's true?
I do not.
I've seen that before. I've seen that other places as well. I mean, I'm assuming wherever you found it.
But that Bill's
a fairly reputable
one.
Source. Yeah.
I'd find it hard to believe that he would be the only one out of 32 that would write the guy back.
I don't know. But going to be fascinating to see how that staff gets built and how that team sort of comes together in another iteration of, you know, New England South. That we've been calling that, you know, the Texans for years now. Now you're going to see it in Miami.
I don't know their cap shape and all that, but or Tannehill's, you know, structure. But if you're Chad O'Shane, you're going down there and you're trying to make your mark, is that the guy you want pulling the trigger?
It's your workday made tolerable.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, why not us?
Zolak and Bertrand.
Buckle your chin strap.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah.
In too deep?
Yeah. Down, brother, check it out. I'm about to throw down. Yeah. Come on, Phil.
V-Town, brother, check it out. I'm about to throw down.
Come on. Oh. Is that a little, watch your words.
A little editing magic.
Yeah, turn
it. It's edited.
Sipping purple changos.
All right, you want to know the little tidbit of information?
Yeah, pay your tees off. Pay your tees off.
Little tidbit. You want some of that?
What do you got?
All right, Chris Greer.
Eat that mic first.
I know, it's a little squeaky there. All getting a little squeaky. You might have to put in a little a service ticket with the engineering department here.
Get fresh paint behind you, though.
I know. Sign's looking tight. They updated that yesterday.
Looks nice.
Replaced the missing O. Gave a little color upgrade on the blue. It pops
beautiful.
A little more now.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful.
Nice.
Here's the latest. Chris Greer.
Beantown.
Is the general manager of the Miami Dolphins.
It's unbelievable.
This is from a Twitter account called FinZone.
Ooh.
Okay. Dun. It's a Dolphins fan site and account.
Excellent.
All right. They've been right on some stuff before, which is why I tell you, it's just a rumor at this point. They write, another scoop coming in. This is their tweet. And you know what? It's so believable that it's worth discussing. Sounds like the Dolphins will be moving on from wide receiver Danny Amendola this offseason. Was up in the air with Chad O'Shea coming in as the offensive coordinator, but from what I've been told, it sounds like Chris Greer isn't interested in letting Dola stay at $6 million a year. Would you be paying Danny Amendola $6 million a year right now? Hell no. That's what we said a year ago when they signed him. At least
it doesn't look the same for him.
At least on this show, I will tell you, we were telling you that. That guy's not worth $6 million a year.
No, I thought he'd be worth $3.5 to $4 million a year. I would say bring him back.
Not at that money.
No, not at that money. Not at $6 million.
So if he's got, you know, a year left in the NFL, and he's going to be making short money to keep playing, a couple million bucks. Well, where would you want to do that, Danny?
Mm.
Where do you want to do that? And my question would be, did he burn the bridge here? With those comments on the way out the door in the back seat with Mike Reese.
It was,
did that burn the bridge?
I'll say this, that it was Welker-like. Bill won't even refer to Welker by name.
Yeah?
I mean, the player.
And will he refer to Danny by name?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. He knows Danny.
But I guess it wasn't Welker like.
Well, I mean, I think Danny did it differently. You know, Danny gave you everything he could. And it wasn't about the money. Danny found a much better deal. Wes wanted to be here. They just said, you know, you're taking too many shots. Plus, we got this kid Edelman. We had the transition ready to go. That's when he went and got Amendola, right? Am I right, Phil? $32 million?
It was as soon as they understood that Welker was going to free agency, they said, we got to move.
Right.
And they signed Amendola, I think, almost as soon as
it started. The timing of it all came together right there, yeah. But I think, you know, the way he played and tore that groin in Buffalo and played through that season with that torn groin, not attached to the bone.
If they cut him before June 1st, they save all $6 million on their cap.
Yeah, no dead cap.
That is a no-brainer. Cut his ass if you're the Dolphins. You cut him. You're not keeping him.
Well, here's
that,
the thing with Amendola, too. Part of the reason they bring him on is to be kind of a culture changer, right?
Yeah,
the Dolphins
absolutely.
Got rid of Landry. They got rid of Sue. They brought in Amendola, Brandon Bolden, Frank Gore, all these guys to help turn things around. Now you've got a whole new coaching staff.
They're not turning things around there now. They're stripping it down.
You're starting from scratch. And so.
And he ain't going to be there for when they build it back up.
That mini movement that they tried to undergo last year is
over.
I would think all but done. Right.
Over.
So you're going to be bringing in new guys, young players, to try to carry out whatever vision it is that you have if you're Brian Flores.
So if you're them.
Amendola might be a part of that, but it's $6 million.
Maybe Chad O'Shea knows Danny Amendola and says, yeah, I don't need him. Like, that could be it, too.
Or it could be, I mean,
helps your play call.
It could be exactly what we saw from him with the Patriots for how many years in a row.
Right.
Just say, okay, Danny, we can't have you at six, but we'd be happy to bring you back at 3 or 2.5. And maybe they go from
there. Save some money in taxes down there. You know, he likes living in Florida. I talked to him at the Super Bowl. He loves it down there.
It's a lock. He will not play for $6 million. It's entirely conceivable that they will cut him. And if they do, is he even worth bringing back? He wasn't very good there this year.
No, he wasn't good there. He was great for you last year. He was money. So I think the relationship is still okay with Bill, but you sort of burned the bridges the way you talked about it. Yeah, just don't air that stuff out.
I would be surprised to see him come back.
I would too, for that very reason, because of the, you know.
Look at Malcolm Butler. Like, Malcolm Butler, of all people, took the high road, never said a thing.
For the comics and
Thank
cars
you,
moment
you know,
with Mike man. Reese.
You know, so it's not easy, that's for sure. He's an sometimes, but a lot of things I didn't like about playing for him, but I must say the things that I didn't like were all in regard to getting the team better, and I respected him. So, I didn't like practicing in the snow. I didn't like practicing in the rain, but that was going to make us a better football team, and that was going to make me a better football player, and it wasn't easy, and He'd be the first to admit at the ring ceremony that it wasn't easy playing for him. And, you know, the silver lining is that we were at the ring ceremony.
So he saved his ass there, though. Now, I knew I'm a better football player because of him. You know, Phil Simms always said that about Parcells. They all said it. LT, man, pain in the ass to play for, but man, and he made me a better man, a better player. And you knew it.
I guess you can't rule anything out ever, right? I mean, Ty Law said a lot of stuff when he was
called Bill
still
liar.
Here.
Liar.
Right.
Yeah.
So
L-I-A-R.
They ended up making that work.
Sure.
So who knows? They are going to have a need at receiver. I mean, this is a position group that's in dire need
Chris
of
Hogan.
Adjustments.
Is he going to be here next year?
I highly doubt it.
Highly doubt that.
Philip Dorsett? Maybe.
Possibly.
Hey, where's he going?
Depending on what he's looking for. Right. But I think you're gonna have to start hitting on some draft picks at some point at that position, because otherwise you're in big trouble there.
Jeff is in Phoenix today. Hi, Jeff. Jeff,
we're doing
going
second
once.
Time
Jeff,
we've done this Phoenix thing.
Is that right? Tim and Quincy. Tim, is this the same Tim from earlier?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey.
No, it's not the same.
Okay, different Tim and Quincy.
What's up, Tim?
So I called in before the Chargers game. I don't know if you guys remember when everyone was crapping on Brady. They were saying, he was done, blah, blah, blah. And I believed in this team this whole season. I believed in Brady throughout the playoffs, throughout the season. I think 11-5 is a good record. I don't know why everyone's crapping on it. But the main thing is I want to take a victory lap because you guys were just like I wouldn't think that Zolak would be the one to, like, also give up on Brady, but you did.
Did you listen to the Right Show?
I did.
Jim, do you know what day I gave up on Tom Brady? Do you recall that
day? I had to call in and defend Brady, but I didn't want to talk about this. I just wanted to make two suggestions. All right, two suggestions for next season, but that's my victory lap.
Oh, wait a minute. For us? As a show? Or?
Saying I was right, so I just want to take a victory lap. Oh, no, okay. No, not for you guys, for the Patriots.
Oh,
next year.
Okay.
All right, so first I just want to say Gronk, I would love to get him back on like a 4-game contract. I would sign him, sit him down, only play in the last 4 games. I know that's not realistic, but I would love to do that. Just sit him out, pay him whatever he wants, $9 million, $12 million, doesn't matter. Get him for the playoffs. Yeah.
$12 million, 4 games?
Yeah. Not our strongest
call. Seems reasonable.
No. Tom and Saugus. Hi, Tom.
It's emotional there, I think.
Hello.
Hey, Tom. Hello.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Can you hear me?
I can now, yes.
Thank you.
My question to you is this. Let me start this way. Sony Michel, I believe, had a pretty decent year this year.
Why don't you pick that up?
And without James Devlin, my theory is he only has 50-60% of his yards. What do you do for a guy like James Devlin where he gets some recognition because he's...
All right, we're going to let you go. A lot happening there, Tom. I think James Devlin has gotten a good deal of recognition this week.
He should be in a Pro Bowl.
And he should be. He should be recognized.
He's the best fullback in the game.
Should have been. Anthony Sherman ended up going to the Pro Bowl. North Attleboro zone.
Yeah.
Did you see him crush people?
Devlin went to the Pro Bowl last year, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yes. Yep.
He had a better year this year.
Well, that touchdown run, he made Mark Barron just give up.
He destroyed a man.
Yeah.
Broke his soul.
Yeah.
Bent his knees.
That's what he does.
I love when a little knees bend.
Even the first play of the game, I think, right? He had that wham block on Sue. I mean, he got the bad end of that, but was effective.
Put himself in the direct path.
13 yards, I think.
That's what you got to do.
That was a good stretch of calls there, that last 5 minutes.
Love James Devlin. Glad he's getting some run this week. He deserves it.
They should put his neck roll in the Patriots Hall of Fame.
Yes, they should.
Right?
Give it its own glass.
There you go. You want recognition? There you go.
I say take that power neck roll off and give him an actual white neck roll with a string through it. You know, to tie down.
Is that not what he has? I just always assumed that's what it was.
No, he's got that square piece of power padding on the back of his shoulder pads. Yeah.
Oh, I just always assumed it was the white one.
But no, he doesn't have the white one. I don't think they make them.
All right, Phil Perry, appreciate your time.
Right,
appreciate
boys.
You being here every Friday this
season. Good
job
this year, pal.
Hey, great season.
Appreciate it.
Really love being on with you, boys.
All right.
And coming up tonight, 6 p.m.
Football fix.
Not another football fix. Football
fix. Oh, yeah. Final one of the year.
What the hell you fix it?
Final one of the year.
Getting no picks tonight.
I've got to face my punishment for coming in last in the picks.
Last. The basement.
You lost a girl.
Just a miracle. Just an absolute miracle story of my comeback this year. Started 0-10-1
to finish third.
It's how you finish.
Yeah, I finished third. I finished third.
It's like the Patriots. You caught your identity.
Yeah, I found my identity. Yep. My identity was go against Beadle on all of his picks and hope they win. And it worked.
You did okay, and you won by a couple of picks.
Yeah. There you go. 6 o'clock.
All right, very good. 6 o'clock on NBC Sports
Boston.
All right,
see you boys.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.